Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It is another large day here on the show on Sabres Live in downtown Buffalo because we're that much closer to draft night on Friday when round one kicks off inside of KeyBank Center. We have Sabres assistant GM Jerry Fortin in studio with us today, which is incredible because we have a long list of things that we can talk to Jerry with, including the early news of the day, Jerry, and that is the preseason schedule being announced for the Sabres. It's shorter this year.
Yes.
It's a four-gamer that leads into an 84-game regular season, and it begins on the road on September the 21st. First home game is the 22nd, with Columbus coming in. As someone who has scouting roots and coaching roots, what is it like looking ahead to a condensed, shorter preseason schedule this year?
I have no idea whether this is a popular public opinion or not, but I'm all for the shorter preseason schedule. Strictly as a scout, terrible hockey games to try to scout. So many variables, a tough evaluation. Marty knows, is it even fair to evaluate longtime NHL players playing in those games? Everyone's on a different timeline in terms of getting ready for the regular season. Then you have the young players in there that have a different agenda. It's tough. So I'm all for the shorter preseason.
My concern for somebody in your position was that, well, because there's only four games, maybe some of the players that are, just drafted or have been drafted a couple of years ago that maybe would get a preseason game won't get that opportunity. But I like what you're saying. It's not easy to even scout those guys if they get that opportunity. So I'm all for it. Four preseason games, even as a goalie. You get a half a game, go right into the season, be done with it. So good. I'm glad that we're on the same page here.
And as you know, Jerry, there's news every day. People are still buzzing on the heels of the season that was and are anxiously awaiting the season to come. Let's look at it quickly from a couple of different perspectives. And one of the talking points, obviously, right now is Alex Tuch and just what it's like in your position within management and in the organization, to deal with a player like Alex and his pending free agency as you try to continue to build this team.
Well, he's obviously had a huge impact on our organization, and that's something on a bigger picture, is Jarmo's responsibility. He'll do what's best for our organization. Mm-hmm. Alex has meant and continues to mean a lot to our organization. So I have no idea how that's going to unfold in the next few weeks here. I'm trying to spend most of my energy focusing on the draft, but Jarmo's doing everything he can every day to try to make our team better. My job is right now on the draft and our staff, the amateur staff, getting focused for the draft. And there's lots of different ways you can make your team better, and we need to get better in all areas.
When the Kessel Ring trade happened and the Sabres go from 27th overall to 20th overall, was the phone buzzing with all of your draft group and that room of saying, oh, now we're shifting our focus to a different area of the draft? Or, you guys know these players so well. Was there a buzz going down to 20? What was that feeling from the draft room?
Well, a few thoughts on that. In the first round, obviously, we pick apart these players for 2 years in some cases. Yeah. So we know the whole group that's available, whether it's at 20 or 27. For me personally, and talking to my amateur staff and conversations with Burge and Jarmo especially, it was a massive move in my mind. And I've heard some of the public narrative, roughly a mid-second round pick is what the tables would tell you the value of that is. And that's probably accurate, but a couple things I would add on that. That's only if you have a trade partner, right? Yeah. So that's the value of the pick if you can get up to 20. But we know from previous years it's almost impossible to do, especially on draft day. So to be able to do that in advance of the draft is a major benefit. We don't have a second or third round pick this year, but I would venture to say if we had our second and our third, that wouldn't have been enough to get up from 27 to 20. So I consider it high value getting up those seven spots, and then especially in this draft. And this is what I had to lean on the amateur staff for, but I also relayed it to Jarmo, and we had numerous conversations about it. I think there's a very good chance at 20 We get one of our players that we have in the 13, 14, 15 range. Mm-hmm. And I think the top 10 or 11 of this draft is almost set in stone. If we were picking 20, I think there's almost no chance we get someone in our 13, I mean 27, pardon me. Yeah. We no chance we get someone in our 13, 14, 15, 16 range. And if you just go back and look at our, you know, recent 3, 4, 5 drafts, I know we got Kulik at 28. Mm-hmm. The 1 year, there was no chance we're getting a Kulik in this draft at 28. I suppose we could get shocked, you know, and we were a little shocked that year. I mean, we tried to move up that draft right after we took Oostlin, because we had Oostlin and Kulik side by side. Mm-hmm. We tried to get up to 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Overpaying in all those cases and couldn't do it. So to get up from 27 to 20 now, 20 now at this point is massive in my mind. We'll see how the draft falls. And then you look, you know, we got Hallenius at 14. We got Benson at 13. Mm-hmm. We got Oostlin at 16. I think that's the range of players we have a decent likelihood of getting now that I don't think we would have gotten at 27.
And what an impact from all the names you just mentioned. But when you really think about moving forward, a player you bring in, but you obviously would have had a strong opinion on him when he was drafted by another organization, then, and that's Josh Doan. And along with Benson, who you just, like, tell me what you saw in both Benson and Doan, and now what you think those two will mean moving forward.
Well, I think it's obvious, and our entire team's, you know, level of compete elevated this year, and I think the stretch that they went through, you know, chasing down Tampa Bay and winning the Atlantic Division and prepped them well for playoff hockey, in my opinion. But those two players kind of lead the charge from a compete level when you combine the compete with the skill level they have, the ability to make plays, the 200-foot game. I mean, I could go through a lot of other players on our lineup and say the same thing, but those two obviously elevated at a high level in the playoffs. And to be able to elevate with both your compete and also your execution level, I think was really impressive. And I, you know, the whole Doan trade, organizational, you know, the wide, I think, you know, every department did a great job on insisting that he was a piece of that deal. And sure, he's probably even been better than we expected and got there quicker. I think we had hoped the player would be this player, but to say that he would have gotten there this year was, you know, a pleasant surprise for all of us.
When you scout and when you talk to these prospects and you get in the room, do you put the coaching hat on sometimes? Because you've had some coaching experience, right?
From a lot.
College and, you know, to higher levels of hockey. So do you put that coaching hat on, or is it reserved on the side, like you have the scouting hat, or can both be the same type of hats?
Well, I think coaching background for sure helps you in your scouting background. And, you know,
we're showing your resume on the screen right now, but you're looking from 96 on, Niagara University, UMass Lowell, Harvard, Buffalo Sabres, you know, like, I mean, that is a lot of
six
experience.
Six different Sabre hats he's worn. I love it.
Assistant coach, amateur scout, assistant director of scouting, director of collegiate scouting, director of amateur scouting, and assistant general manager. Like, that's a lot of different business cards.
Yeah, and I think all the different areas help you, you know, in corresponding areas. You know, and the thing that helps you the most is making mistakes, right? I mean,
and learning from those.
Especially in college when you scouted and coached, mm-hmm. You lived, you know, good and bad with your own picks.
Yeah.
So you had to try to make it work, obviously, and not so much in this day and age because kids are coming and going. But back then, you typically had a kid for 4 years when you scouted. From the coaching perspective, it definitely helps. You know, the danger you can run into is you don't want to get caught up too much in the player right now. Mm-hmm. And when you're coaching, that's more of your job. What's the player doing for you right now? And when you're scouting, you have to understand the warts and the development path, and maybe you're 4, 5, 6 years away from the player you want him to be. But what are the attributes you're seeing that will allow them to get there? But it obviously helps, and I, you know, we have a lot of scouts on our staff that have pretty extensive coaching experience too. Yeah.
Will it be, it'll be much easier to answer this after the weekend is done, but as you approach the draft, do you feel a different sense in strategy under Yarmo as you head into this?
Well, I think the one thing that's been very helpful with Yarmo is he lived this from our end, right? Mm-hmm. Like he pounded the pavement. He's extensive experience as a scout probably to me, but at a higher level. He did it in a lot of different roles in different organizations. Having said that, he is very clear all the time. He doesn't want to interfere with our process at all. And the mistakes he has made over the years is when he interferes with the scouts who know the players the best. So he's been very careful not to do that, even when he joined us last year. But some of the global perspective he can give us and some of the lessons he's learned over the years is extremely helpful.
Yeah, and obviously the communication is something that's important. And to talk about coaching or scouting or anything, communicating is good. What about when you were playing? Did you have the same kind of communication lines with the coaches that you had or some of the people that recruited you? We got this picture, and producer Sam is going to bring it up, of you playing at UB.
Amazing. Oh,
and we can't see, like, this is you next to the goalie. I love that you were, like, you know, taking care of your goalies.
We couldn't find one in color? Seriously?
But look at your skates. You have a white blade and a black blade.
Those are the old tuck blades, right?
Yeah, but what happened with two different colors? Did everybody have two different colors blade?
You want to know what's funny? I went into the Hall of Fame at UB, but probably more as a soccer player than a hockey player. But the picture they put up in there is that picture. So the amount of times I get asked about that, you know, someone will be out in alumni arena and they pull up the picture and I'm like, oh, please. First of all, I wasn't a very good player, so I didn't have to worry about the coaches talking to me too much.
Okay, so communication was good.
I had a great college coach my last year and a half, where I respect the hell out of, a guy named Ed Wright, who was the first black college hockey coach in Division II hockey.
Wow.
Division I or Division II. Went to Boston University with Jack Parker, Herb Wakabayashi, who was probably one of the best players at college hockey at the time. And scouted for Anaheim, won a Stanley Cup as a scout for Anaheim. A tremendous human being, and he would ask me about that sometimes, too. I don't know. The budgets weren't quite what they were back then, I guess.
How do we get UB hockey back?
Show you the impact they had on both programs. They dropped the hockey program and the soccer program.
Oh, no.
And I coached the soccer team there for 6 years as well. So.
All right. That's clearly not your direct result of you. But we do love the fact that you were two sports, and it's World Cup time, and you have a soccer background, and we're talking about just athletics in general and player evaluation. Like, what is it like for you when you watch a World Cup and you just tie in your sports knowledge when watching these players at the highest level?
Well, I'm out of that realm these days, but I have been watching a lot of it. And the only thing I would say is, you know, I just came back from Florida with the Russian combine down there, and talking to some of those players, the one thing we encourage all these players to do is to play multiple sports. Yeah. And too many of them stop playing at 12, 13 years old. And even if it's not on a formal basis, this is all athletes. You have and I'm sure our exercise science people would tell you the same thing. You're doing nothing but helping yourself in your hockey development by playing other sports. But the World Cup being in our country is amazing. I mean, it wasn't the World Cup, but I had a chance when I was very young to go up to Toronto and actually play like an exhibition match and meet Pelé afterwards. And the impact that had on me as a young athlete was amazing. And that was, you know, Toronto's always been a mecca for soccer. I don't know if people know this. Rochester, New York,
was one of the best places. Yeah. I remember going to the Rhinos game when they were in the A League before MLS soccer, and it was there at ESL Park now. Yeah. But it used to be called Frontier Field, and they used to have we would go when I was with the Rochester Americans. It was incredible. It was so much fun. But you were a goalie in soccer.
I was a goalie.
I cannot get around that. Like, I felt like a goalie in hockey, maybe a goalie in soccer, but you weren't a goalie in hockey, but you were a goalie in soccer.
Yeah.
What was that? Because I was terrible as a soccer goalie. I couldn't do it. It's too big. The angles were wrong. How was that being a goalie in soccer for you?
I was thrown in there at a very young age because I was always playing like 2, 3, 4 years up with older kids. So I just got thrown in there. Quite honestly, I hated it. I wish I was a field player. I wish the rules were like they were now, where the goalies actually are using their feet a lot more now and a lot more involved in the game. But I got, you two probably know, I have a lot of hyperactivity in me. So being a goalie in soccer was not enough action. I liked indoor soccer a lot better.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Lot more activity for the goalie.
I'm the same way with lacrosse. Like, I prefer the indoor game. It's just it's tighter. Obviously, it resembles hockey in a way because of the confines. But, yeah, it's action-packed. Now,
how the heck did we get to this point? Weren't we talking about the draft?
This is all, like, leading to, you know, what's going to happen this weekend. But just thought process. Like, it's just so nice to have conversation that's not, you know, kind of familiar. Sometimes I feel like we talk about the same things every draft, right? Yeah. And so you wanna dive in a little deeper and pursue different angles as to, you know, what makes you think the way you do when you're looking at athletes. And I look at your background here and just wonder like how it all kind of ties in with the growth of your positions within the organization and also the number of different people that you've worked with in this organization to get to today. Because we briefly touched on how you viewed Yarmo and his draft approach right now, but like, what else have you taken from this more than a decade now with the Sabres?
Well, one thing I've taken for sure, and I mentioned this to Yarmo, and it really was reinforced in my mind when I heard Lindy talk about the continuity of his coaching staff. Mm-hmm. I think the continuity of our amateur scouting staff, especially the past 5 years, has been massive. And some of those people that are extremely valuable in our organization that, you know, do the really hard work have been here longer than that. But for the most part, as an amateur staff, we've worked together, especially the past four drafts, I would say. And I think we have a lot of work in a lot of areas that we can improve in still, but I think we're getting a lot better. Especially as we approach some of the mid-round picks in the last couple drafts. And I think a lot of that has to do with continuity and knowing each other's strengths and weaknesses. That's really important.
But, I mean, people think if you're in hockey, people that are in hockey, that's because they played or they played at a high level, they know the game. And I say everybody comes from different backgrounds. Like, we just watched Carolina winning the Stanley Cup, Eric Kalski. Like, it's a different background. There is a lot of different, you know, John Chayka getting hired as the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs and whatnot. You have a law degree from UB. So our kind of thinking was also with, you know, a loss that we suffered in the organization and the alumni and Jerry Meehan. And I'm like, I wonder, did you have any interaction with Jerry Meehan at UB? Because that's where he was teaching and the law aspect of it. And just the law degree, how do you use that into some of the positions and some of the things that you do within the organization?
Well, it's really thinking analytically, I think, and you know, being able to listen to and understand other people's opinions and understand you're going to be wrong just as much as anyone else, but you have
to. Do you sometimes just say, I object? I object, Your Honor. And then you're like, oh, wait, I'm not in a courtroom right now. It's not like it used to be.
Another thing, I wasn't really fond of being in the courtroom, but put that right up there with being a soccer goalie. Yeah. I will tell you, though, like the Appellate Division Court of Appeals, which I went in front of a couple of times, the pressure in that environment's pretty good, too,
oh,
you know.
Boy.
Especially if you have a client sitting right next to you watching you, you know. But that wasn't my forte by any means. But, you know, our analytics staff is a massive part of our draft process and our pro process right now. They don't have, you know, extensive backgrounds in hockey. We have various scouts on our staff that played in the NHL. We have various scouts on our staff that never played hockey at a high level. Every one of them brings something just as valuable as the others. I really do believe, you know, we all take our turns being wrong. Mm-hmm. And the important thing is, as a group, that you protect each other and you get to an end point where you're eliminating the mistakes. That's first and foremost my job, I view. Like, whether it's my mistake or someone else's opinion or analysis in our organization, let's try to eliminate the mistakes and then do the best, you know, with the next group of players on getting to a point where we get the best player. The players make you look good and bad sometimes, too. Let's yes. face it. When you're drafting them at 17 years old, a lot of these players we talked about have made us look really good because they've put the work in. Our development staff has put the work in. I think almost everything's gone right with our development staff and our coaching to get these players that we've talked about get to where they are. But then the players have done the work.
Do you have a favorite draft pick?
No, I don't.
Really?
I don't think so. No, there's, you know, it's the ones you miss
if he
on
had
that
drafted me. He would have said
so. Do you have ones
yes.
that you missed?
Yeah,
on?
that burns you. You know that really burns you. The players you. I can think. I'm not going to mention them, but I can think of two picks that I would purely take responsibility for missing on in the second or third round.
Oh, wow.
The past few years. Where we probably overthought it a little bit, or I focused on the wrong piece of information. Mm. And I'm still happy with the players we got there instead, but I know where those two mistakes were, and you know, in a sense, it set us back. It's two pieces we could really use right now. But I think for every two, we've made a couple other really good picks too.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you see like a class that we'll talk about, you know, later in the show, the Hall of Fame, and a guy like Patrice Bergeron, name comes out, and everybody's got their draft stories, right? They either met with Bergeron or they had that discussion about him. And I'm kind of intrigued to know, like, did you, in your time scouting, did you come across a player like Patrice Bergeron that you're like, oh, this is going to be the next one? Or even him, like when it was the time of his draft and players in and around him. Do you recall some of those things when you see players retiring or getting into the Hall of Fame?
You know, driving down here today, I was just talking to our assistant director, Jason Nightingale, and the topic we were talking about is going into the draft. How can you identify the players that are truly going to adjust, going up levels, and truly do what they have to do to be the best player they can be? And in a lot of cases, that means sacrificing, right?
Yes.
So in Bergeron's case, he sacrificed offense in his career for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Points, you know, probably a contract dollars. How do you find that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Really hard to do. What is our process for trying to find that guy? Very imperfect. But that's a lesson for us all the time. You know, defensemen that are willing to just be good partners and shut down defense. Look at Sammy, mm-hmm. the impact he's made on an organization.
Yeah.
You see the offense came this year, and he probably could have been more offensive earlier in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that might disappear, it might not disappear. But what you've always had is a perfect partner for others.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find a guy in the draft that's willing to do that, especially in their first 2, 3, 4 years of pro hockey, where everyone's talking about the next contract,
mm-hmm.
and they're judging the next contract on numbers and production? So when we truly find that part of the formula, then we're really off and running. But we're trying all the time with that.
Do you have better numbers, though, now? That help you in that regard ahead of time, the non-traditional numbers, if you will?
I think, you know, we go back and forth with the analytics department all the time on trying to identify those type of players, but also having the requisite skill level you need to play in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just try to identify a player at a lower level that's going to be a role player in that type of role, and he gets to the NHL and he doesn't have the skill set to do everything else at least a basic level, it's not going to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they've done a great job on adjusting, I think, their lower lineup forwards and defensive type D-men to help us identify those. And scouts probably naturally gravitate toward those type of players anyways, but then we'll miss a lot of times because the player doesn't hit the minimum threshold they need to get to the NHL level. So you find both, you're in great shape. You know, and then you got a Bergeron.
But how do you measure, like Bergeron was in the league at 18. Then there was a lockout. He went back, I think, at 19, played in Providence, came back up. Zach Benson making the NHL at 18. So how do you measure, how quick will they get there to, well, what's the, you know, ultimate best that that player can get you? Because getting an 18, 19, 20-year-old to play in the NHL could be very beneficial for the organization.
As an amateur staff, we should never be worried about how quickly they get there.
Okay.
I mean, maybe if you're picking in the top two or three of the draft, you have that conversation, the top five, let's say. But we you make mistakes if you start getting concerned about that. Because a huge part of our equation many times is the late developer, the athletic upside of a player, what's still to come. You know, those are the diamonds that you find sometimes in the rough, right? Yep. The kid that has always been the biggest, fastest, strongest, maybe even the most talented, sometimes those players struggle to adapt as they go up levels because they've never had to adjust before. They were always just better, faster, stronger. If you would ask and surveyed our amateur staff, I would guess 90% of us would have bet against and maybe not even wanted Benson to be in the NHL his first year from a development perspective. Now, the kids, you know, probably proved everyone
special
that, it was the right decision. It didn't stifle his development. There's still more to come. I think he showed that this year. But, you know, that was a surprise to us, I'll tell you, that he was ready to play in the NHL right after his draft. And certainly not why we drafted him. We all loved him and had him much higher on our list than where we got him, but we didn't think it was because he was going to get there quick.
Who did we have that said, was it Sam Cosentino? That was like, he was one of those that I had a lot higher? Or is that Scott Wheeler? Maybe one of the two.
Who, Benson?
Benson.
Oh, he's yeah, like, no, there have been a lot of Benson.
There's a couple of them that really loved him, and they're like, we had him a lot higher.
But Sammy came on and said, I couldn't stand Braden Holtby. Never thought he was going to make it. And he goes,
I'm not afraid to say this here because, it's his size, right? And with Benson, and he doesn't have any pure separation speed.
Yeah.
Now, I watched, in playoffs, he actually was, carrying the puck and his ability to transport it and at pretty good speed, he's taken a step in that area. He'll continue to get faster.
Yeah.
And he didn't have an outside shot threat in junior hockey at all with all the points he put up, and probably still doesn't have much one, but that's gotten better too.
Yeah.
So those were areas where we looked at, well, if he can improve those areas and he's got the hockey sense and compete and puck skills and, in spades, look out, but it's going to take time, and he's just done it quicker than we thought.
Well, you've asked so many questions while giving us great answers here, and you're trying to look at a player and say, how can he be that player? How much of it is environment that they ultimately come into that allows them to be like Bergeron?
Bergeron, Zucker, a Hall of Famer. Like the connection
but
there.
The Bruins at that time, it was Chara, right? And it's been Chara for like a decade and a half, and the impact that he had on that organization. How much of it do you see? And again, that's beyond your control as a manager, as a scout.
But that's where I said I do think our development staff, two different staffs in Rochester, coaching at the NHL level has made a massive difference. But there does come a time where you might have too many prospects, and our guy's going to get enough opportunity. Now, what you're talking about, needing that opportunity in the proper environment, I think is a huge part of the equation. I think when you're talking about the really special players, if you're talking about a Bergeron or maybe some of our players, that we've taken the first round that have the ability to take another step and really be special players in the league, they're not there yet. I think those guys are going to find a way no matter what. Mm-hmm. I just think they're wired a certain way. I think they're going to do it no matter what. Could it slow it down, the process, speed up the process? For sure. But these really special players are going to get there.
What is your, just to put it in a Mount Rushmore Hall of Fame style, what is your Hall of Fame of scouting? Like, give me the four players that you scouted, you interviewed, and you're like, those are my Hall of Fame of scouting.
Well, we got a bunch of them on our team or close to being on our team right now. I mean, we're obviously, very happy with all those players. Oslin, Helenius, Benson, I think Kulik, people do or don't talk about him, and he'll be back, and I'm convinced better than ever. But then there's also the, you know, Kozak Stoys of the world, which is great as a seventh round pick. Some free agent signings over the years. Yeah. We had a couple great college free agents come through here, and Evan Rodriguez and Chad mm-hmm. Ruedel that, you know, both went
long
on to
careers.
Win Stanley Cups
yeah.
and long careers. And I actually recruited Chad Ruedel to UMass Lowell. Chad did not have one scholarship offer besides UMass Lowell wow. in college hockey.
Wow. Yeah, that's good.
So it's but there's, you know, I couldn't pick between them. There's so I tell you what, the first
we'll
overall
switch the question.
But then. You appreciate yeah. mentors. If there was a Hall of Fame for hockey scouting, who would be the
yes.
first inducted?
We'll change the question.
Hall of Fame for scouting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm going to – this is not at the NHL level, but I'll give a little shout-out to the first guy that hired me as a college assistant coach, a guy named Blaze McDonald,
yeah,
who won a national championship as an assistant coach at BU, mm-hmm. was at Princeton, you know, was at UMass Lowell, coached a couple different places at the Division I level.
Got Niagara into the tournament, right?
Got us into the tournament our yep. fourth year. We finished number three in the nation that mm-hmm. year. I mean, we were still playing games in outdoor rinks that season when we got up to three in the country. One game away. Should have been North Dakota that year when they won it all in the second round of the NCAA tournament. But Blaze was a big influence mm-hmm. on me, actually. I mean, he pounded the pavement as an assistant coach making nothing in college hockey.
Yeah.
And you know, here I was, an attorney that was kind of walking away from my law practice at the time and making $3,000 coaching, you know, Division I hockey. But he gave me the chance, you know, and he was good to me over the years. And then, you know, I got a chance to later on work with some great people, and Teddy Donato and mm-hmm. Sean McEachran and other people like Greg Brown, I think the world of,
yeah.
Dave Quinn.
The Browns are great.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that Teddy Donato on The Price is Right?
I have.
Theodore. Go Google that. It's pretty good.
You know what? Those guys, you know, some of the NHL players I got to coach with at the college
yeah.
level, and then to come here and coach with Joe Sacco and Teppo Numminen,
yeah.
They taught me so much. That was sort of the missing piece in what I needed in terms of a scouting coaching perspective. Mm-hmm. When I got to interact, I coached on some USA teams with some great guys that have gone on to be head coaches in the NHL. And those experiences taught me so much from a scouting perspective.
Jerry, thank you for today. There's so much that goes into this, and you gave us greater perspective on all of it. Good luck this weekend.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Jerry Fortin, assistant GM of the Sabres. If you missed any of the interview, check it out on Sabres YouTube. Sabres are hosting the draft this week, of course, and there will be FanFest in Ticketmaster Alumni Plaza on both Friday the 26th and Saturday the 27th. Music, games, prospect red carpet, and more. Visit sabres.com/draft. We're back after this.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
This upcoming season, you can create unforgettable game nights for 10 or more people with group ticketing experiences. If you, of course, you save on box office pricing, get access to exclusive experiences like the photo on center ice, post-game slapshots, Sabres access, and more. Just visit sabres.com/groups to learn more about this, and we'll see you and your group inside KeyBank Center this coming season. Preseason schedule was announced earlier today. You can find it on our Sabres socials and sabres.com. It's a four gamer. And of course, we've been talking a lot about the names that are in the news. Reading yesterday,
yes.
Chris Johnston's latest trade board at The Athletic has two Sabres on it. Bo Byram, very high on the list, and also Devon Levi, very low on the list. Darren Dreger talked last week on this show through his insider position at TSN about the teams circling, the number of teams that are circling around mm-hmm. the Sabres when it pertains to Bo Byram. I found it interesting yesterday in LeBrun's article that recapped a lot of what's been going on, saying that his belief, and reiterating what Darren had said, was that they don't believe that Bo Byram is interested in a long-term deal with the Sabres at this point in time.
Yes.
So that all goes into what happens next year from a Sabres standpoint with Byram and or others. But you could also hear it in Jerry Fortin's voice just about what Alex Tuch, again, has meant to this organization. So there is still so much, as we sit here on June 23rd, Friday is the draft. Free agency is next week. Everything can look similar or a lot different by this time 10 days from now.
There's an on-ice and then there's an off-ice part of what players bring to the organization. And Alex Tuch, from the first day, he brought in an off-ice work mentality, work ethic, and practice. He wasn't even healthy to play when he first got traded, and I saw a change at practice, and I think that everybody in the organization saw that. But there's an on-ice side of it. There's a business side of it. So you got to be able to put all of those things together, which makes Alex Tuch in the position that he's in, could be the top free agent available on July 1. When it comes to Bo Byram, he still has a year left. So the Sabres, yes, obviously they're going to get calls. Bo Byram was one of three Sabres defensemen with 40 points or more this year. And that had never happened in the Sabres franchise, three defensemen with 40 or plus points. So he was a big part of what Owen Power was able to do, what Dahlin and Samuelson were able to do. He got in on some power play action, you know, at times during the season. So there, but there's another level that I think Bo Byram can see that he could get to. And maybe that level is not available here, but he still has a year under contract. Teams are gonna call, but just like Alex Tuch last year, you know, the Sabres could go into next season thinking Bo Byram will be with us. We got to make the playoffs. We got to win the division, win the conference, win a Stanley Cup, and then we'll figure it out afterwards, just like they're dealing with Alex Tuch right now.
You've had two passports in your lifetime, but you never had this passport, so you were never eligible to win the Golden Puck Award or the Guldpucken, which is Guldpucken in Sweden, to Sweden's Hockey Player of the Year, which this year is Rasmus Dahlin.
Well, when you look at what Rasmus Dahlin was able to do in the Olympics and the way that he played for Team Sweden and the offense.
It looks
like
he just shot 69 in the final round.
It was incredible how Matthias Samuelson commented on Dahlin's Instagram post, and he goes, "Love the sweater vest, very classy." So, yes, I mean, it looks like he had just come off the golf course, and Dahls likes his golf in the summer. But to be given the gold puck as the best Swedish hockey player in an Olympic year with a lot of really solid Swedish hockey players, that's another feather in his cap.
Nothing new, or I should say, as expected, the Oilers land Mike Babcock as their head coach. DJ Smith has been hired as an assistant there, so Maple Leafs are blowing throughout Alberta's capital.
Well, they couldn't hire Jim Hiller as an assistant because he got hired as a head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But when Mike Babcock was coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs going back to 10 years ago, he had DJ Smith, he had Jim Hiller as assistants. So now he grabs DJ Smith, brings him over to the Edmonton Oilers. We all knew that was going to happen late last week. It was cleared. Mm-hmm. Although it didn't put Mr. Babcock in the least, it put Master Backway in the least favorable light or something like that.
Like the me wording, in the studio here.
The wording was a little weird, but basically it says
it was legal
he could
jargon.
Be as and much of a, you know what, we can't stop him from coaching in the NHL.
And no one would appreciate that legal jargon more than a Hall of Fame now inductee this fall in Brian Burke, who goes in as a builder, because he mastered it from both sides, many sides within the game, including as a Stanley Cup winning GM. Patrice Bergeron, Carey Price, Pekka Rinne, Keith Tkachuk, Cindy Curley also going into the Hall.
So congratulations on all of the members of the incoming class of 2026 for the Hockey Hall of Fame. I do have a small Marty Rantanen feeling coming in as I was writing my stuff today. I said yesterday, Carey Price. Yes, Carey Price is in my opinion. He was a dominating factor, Vezina and MVP. I think that's important to separate a goalie winning the MVP, winning the Hart. That is what Dominik Hasek did. That's the you know, a separator for me into being able to go there. Pekka Rinne, I'm like, Pekka Rinne was good. Pekka Rinne was great at times. He won the Vezina. That's great. But then I started looking at other goalies, right, that have the same kind of numbers as Pekka Rinne. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at, well, Ryan Miller as a Vezina as well, played a few, like almost 100 more games, has more wins, numbers are the same. Chris Osgood
should be in.
So much more.
But they don't prioritize winning, seemingly, because Claude Lemieux's not in either.
Yeah, but you know what? Chris Osgood has Stanley Cups. Chris Osgood,
three of them.
He doesn't have a Vezina trophy, but
cares?
I get it. Who cares? I'm looking at, look, I think it was Jeff Merrick that said on this show that goaltenders have been under represented yeah. at the Hall of Fame. I think maybe they're trying to change that. Mike Vernon got in yeah. a few years back. But I'm looking at upcoming. Ryan Miller, Curtis Joseph, Jonathan Quick, Chris Osgood, Marc-Andre Fleury, Sergei Bobrovsky, Andre Vasilevsky, Connor Hellebuck, Igor Shesterkin. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a lot of goalies if Pecorini gets in.
Dazzled and disturbed time here.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
We're going heavy on the dazzled today
yes.
as the Bills have held their ribbon cutting at the new stadium.
It is going to be fantastic at Highmark Stadium when it opens. Well, it's open now, but when it fully gets going with the football season. And obviously the ribbon cutting was a great event right in front of Highmark. And we've seen like the Buffalo statues have been put in place. You can look at the stadium from many different angles. If you are, you know, from the old Highmark, Mark's looking in. You can be on Southwestern looking the other way. It's looking fantastic. So I cannot wait to go into that building for Bills games.
Congratulations, Linda Cohn, on an incredible SportsCenter ESPN career that concludes this Friday.
A goalie. She was a goalie. Linda Cohn played goalie, and she actually tried out to be an emergency backup with, I think it was the LA Kings. Anyway, she went. But Linda Cohn, if you were a fan of SportsCenter back in the days, the personality, and I got to sit, she was a huge Rangers fan, so I got to sit down with her multiple times after practice and talk to her. She was great, and she's retiring now. Fitting that our last show will be after the NHL draft, like recapping the draft and everything else that happens on Friday.
Jazz Chisholm channeling your hot dog eating exploits in Montreal as a player. He is disturbed with his blow pop sucking while playing in the field.
You know what? Like, I feel like baseball should have more of the, you know what? You're waiting. You haven't gotten the ball in second base forever.
It's actually not that bad. Like, it sounds worse when you, like,
no.
I mean, whatever. I mean, what's the difference between that and old days chewing tobacco or, you know, yeah. wads of gum?
I mean,
gum.
Dennis Martinez had a blow pop in his cheek of tobacco back in his, or what I love that they do on a base Sunday night baseball on ESPN,
yeah.
they mic up the guys while they're on
exactly.
the field. Like, that's like, that's yeah. not distracting. Yeah. You focus, and that's fine.
You want disturbing. You watch, like, Naked Gun and see the ridiculousness that it is.
You want disturbing? The Yankees had a few errors the other night. Overthrown second, nobody covering home, guy running from first to third. That's disturbing.
It will not be an error if you lock in right now for your 26-27 seats for the upcoming Sabres season, and you can do so with a 10-game plan. You get per-game savings, playoff ticket priority, guaranteed seat location. Choose from a couple of plans, each featuring one matchup against either Tampa or Montreal, plus nine more games. You can learn more. Secure your plan at sabres.com/10.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
As the World Cup continues, the goal-scoring record is very much in play for the next few weeks. Let's get to Marty's World Cup recap in 43 or less.
It started with Messi in Argentina. Well, Messi, he broke the all-time record with his 17th and 18th goal in the World Cup. I mean, this is his sixth World Cup. This is incredible. He's 38 years old. And they won 2-0. Well, you know what? Mbappe says, I will keep right behind you, because Mbappe now has 16 goals in his World Cup career. He scored two goals in France, winning 3-0. So that was also huge. And then, you know what? Well, Norway, and maybe the best striker in all of soccer right now, is Haaland. Well, he says, hold my beer, because I'm going to score two as well. So we talked about yesterday, three big match, and the three stars came to play, and it was fantastic.
And you heard Jerry Fortin, the Sabres assistant GM, earlier in the show, highlight Mattias Samuelsson and his growth after being selected on this date, 32nd overall in the same draft as Dahlin. That was 2018. And think of all the offensive moments we celebrated this year because of Samuelsson's efforts.
Feels like that was 25 years ago by looking at him. He looks so young on that screen, but you know,
but he's the
matured.
Old man of the young group.
He's the old man of the young group, and obviously he's been a big part of what the Sabres did last year, making the playoffs for the first time in 15 years.
Happy birthday to Larry Playfair, Sabre legend. He is 68 today.
Bucko.
Bucko, most penalty minutes minutes by a defenseman in franchise history, third most penalty minutes all time in franchise history at 1392, but defined more by his greatness as a human being. Our happy 90th to Penny Bellis, the great mom of our boss, Chris Ann.
Yeah, Mama Bellis, happy birthday, happy 90th, and hopefully you get some cake or something good later today.
And terrific new guest on the show tomorrow, Cam Robinson from Elite Prospects, as we inch closer to the draft.